A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in
concentrate
time
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 294. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Chronicles of Narnia. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
And we are in fantasy rather than science fiction, going into the magical land of Narnia through the wardrobe in the 3 BBC serials from 1988 to 1990, a total of 18 30-minute episodes covering 4 of the original novels by C.S. Lewis in quite faithful adaptations.
Yes, they are faithful. It's covering 4 books, as you say, 3 serials, 18 episodes. So there's actually quite a lot to get through. And you'll probably notice last time we can't really give you too many details from each individual serial. But it is, you know, The Chronicles of Narnia on the BBC. It is one of those shows with a huge reputation, fondly remembered by viewers of a certain age. It is a Sunday classic in a way, Brian.
Yes, this was a big show and a big production for the BBC at the time, for sure.
So let's get on to the 3rd serial from 1990, which is the 4th book, The Silver Chair. This time we join Eustace Scrubb, the rather miserable Pevensey cousin from The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, who has become a reformed character because Narnia has that effect on you. And this time he joins up with another school child, a bullied school child called Jill Pole. And between them, they escape the bullies at a British public school and exchange that for the wonders of Narnia, of course.
But once again, it's a transformed Narnia where things are not looking good. So help is needed from these children who need to go on this quest to free Prince Rillian, that is Caspian's son, Caspian from the previous couple books, to find Prince Rillian and free him from the enchantments of what we find out is the Silver Chair.
Yes, we do. They do like a magical quest, obviously, in a magical land. Quests are all.
Oh, yes. And a new mentor and guide character is required, too. And that is a being called the Marsh Wiggle. This particular Marsh Wiggle called Puddle Glum, played by none other than Tom Baker, with great relish, I think.
Yes, he certainly is enjoying himself. As I said last time, I'm guessing he's a fan of the source material. And he certainly does it justice as this sort of like squelchy marsh creature with sort of frog-like characteristics who leads the children through Narnia.
Yes, quite neat stuff there. And it takes on a bit of a different tone in how it's produced compared to the first couple, but still definitely works as part of this series.
And it's interesting, I noticed, I suppose it's a while since I visited the books, but that C.S. Lewis very sort of definitely was noticing his characters were aging and, you know, growing up and beyond Narnia, and so were some of his readers. And so he was, I think, quite often, certainly in these 4 books, we see him sort of introducing younger characters to journey to Narnia. Perhaps, you know, keep his younger readers interested. And it's also interesting to note, I thought, that there's certainly Narnia has a magical and sort of reformative effect on some of the children, particularly Edmund from the first books. And then, of course, Eustace Scrubb, who becomes a much better character having visited Narnia.
Yes, and we do always have this idea that this is a journey for children. And once the children become too old, they can't go back to Narnia. And we see that at different times with all of those original 4 Pevensey children.
Yes, as you say, and I know interesting essays have been written about the older Pevensey children over the years. It's been the subject of academic debate, why they can't return to Narnia or why they are no longer interested in Narnia.
Oh, very interesting. The Chronicles of Narnia is clearly, it's not only a classic of British literature and fantasy and children's literature, but this adaptation is one of the classics of the BBC Sunday tea time drama and, you know, the adaptations of classic literature that the BBC was known for. This was different from the regular classic strand, but it fits into that as well.
Yes, it's right up there, you know, dare I say it, in the big three with the Box of Delights, which was earlier, and then Five Children and It, which I believe came after the Narnia adaptations. But, you know, this is real sort of blue-remembered, golden-remembered hills of classic BBC tea time productions.
Yes, absolutely. And it's full of these very appealing ideas of the magical land that is sort of has, you know, is quite alluring to children, both as readers and TV viewers.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. You know, who doesn't want to knock on the back of an old smelly wardrobe and find yourself in a magical wintry land and having tea with a faun called Mr. Tumnus? And of course, it's great for parents and grandparents as well, who I'm sure enjoyed sitting down with their children and grandchildren and watching this show, safe in the knowledge that they were in, you know, excellent hands with the BBC.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course, you know, C.S. Lewis, famous for his conversion to Christianity, or, you know, the importance that became to him in his later life, and the allegorical aspects that he introduced into his Narnia books. I mean, you know, the most obvious example, obviously, is the first book, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the sacrifice and subsequent resurrection of Aslan, the Christ-like figure in the Narnia mythos. I thought it was perhaps slightly less obvious with the magical quests of the later books, but you noticed it a bit more, I think, than me, Brian.
Yes, it's definitely there in the portrayal of Aslan. He never stops being a Christian character, and there are some references in some of the things he says and the like that are clearly references to that. And it's all from the books. The BBC was being faithful and including those types of things pretty much as they were there. They did not adapt the final book in the series, The Last Battle, which is well reputed and appropriately so for being very heavy on the Christian metaphors indeed.
Right. It's a long time since I've done the books, Brian, so... Okay, so it's certainly there. It's an interesting aspect of it. But, you know, again, it would be very cozy stuff for the BBC in a way. As I said, I can almost smell the tea and crumpets of a Sunday tea time when I'm watching these shows.
Now that you mention tea and crumpets, mentioning food is interesting, because then this is going to the novels, really. But food is very important in the Narnia series. Famously for the White Witch luring Edmund to her cause with Turkish Delight. And this is something that is a little strange being read now, because, you know, often children are not as familiar with Turkish Delight, or it's something that seems strange that he was lured in this way. But something that sort of occurred to me just as I was seeing these adaptations quite recently, if you look at when it was set, when it was written, and even when it was published, these books come from a time of food rationing in the UK.
Yes.
And in particular, from 1940 onwards and into the early 1950s, sugar was rationed. So this idea of Edmund being lured not only with Turkish delight, but an unlimited supply of Turkish delight is something that I think makes more sense when we think about this as coming from a time when sugar was rationed and you had limits on sugar and other types of food.
You know, that's absolutely fascinating, actually, Brian, now that you mention it. I'm reminded of similar points that have been made about the success of the Bond novels by Ian Fleming and, you know, how in austerity Britain, the fantastic food and drink that Bond consumes in great detail in the novels must have been entirely captivating. And here, as you say, I mean, in 50s Britain, the idea of Turkish delight must have been, you know, a real sort of captivation and allure, and of course endless, you know, unlimited Turkish delight. Fascinating thought, the food of Narnia.
The Turkish delight is the most obvious case, but you also have the dinner with the beavers where it's, you know, this wonderful spread of homemade food and there being a lot of it there and the way it's described. You have banquets later on and in some of the later books. There are a lot of references to, you know, wonderful food and wonderful meals in Narnia. And I think that really ties to the time that this is coming from.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, of course, the Narnia books have been adapted many, many times. It's been done on the radio. There's been animated versions. You mentioned that you'd seen a stage production of the first book, Brian.
Many years ago, I did see a stage production, yes. And I imagine that's been done a number of times. In this case, it was very much being done for children, but that's certainly something that's been done.
And of course, now we've got the big budget CGI Disney movies of the first three books here. So they came out in 2005, 8 and 2010. And I believe the Silver Chair is still on the schedule to be made. I don't know what's happening with that at the moment. But I was interested from Wikipedia that the three films so far have a worldwide gross of in excess of $1.5 billion. So, you know, big stuff. And certainly the CGI lion, I suppose, the animatronic version with two men in a suit that we've been looking at might struggle at times. But we'll talk about that perhaps in a moment.
Absolutely. But of course, these novels from the 1950s are still considered classics, being read to children and read by children to this day.
Absolutely, yes.
So we should get into some of our own thoughts here, because there's a lot to talk about. So, Eamon, what did you like about the BBC adaptation of The Chronicles of Narnia?
Okay, so a little warning up front. I should say that I'm well aware that we're treading on almost hallowed ground here, because these are, you know, series that are very, very fondly remembered. I have to say, this was from the period of time when I wasn't really watching television. You know, I didn't have young kids of my own then. I was busy being, you know, a young adult and not watching a great deal of television. So I don't remember them from the time. They are almost impossibly British and wonderful and cozy and lovely in that way that we've referred to so often of a tea time serial from a Sunday tea time with the family. And as I say, it does make me feel tea and crumpets are coming on, Brian.
Very nice. I think the writing, the adaptation here was done very well. I think it was very well judged. The tone of it is just right to capture what was in those novels. And they did stay very close to the source material, which is something that I appreciate. And I think they did a good job of making that material work on screen.
Yes, it is faithful. And they've done a good job of putting it up there. And, you know, we have to say that the amount of work they've put into the visuals of this production, as well as the music, is staggering in a way for the time and for the budgets that they must have been doing it on. You know, as I say, I love a practical effect, and I do actually love the Aslan that they gave us here. You know, we could carp about the lip syncing, but apart from that, it's a great creation for the BBC.
Yeah, visually, this is a tremendously ambitious production. All three productions are. And, of course, something as big and ambitious as that, in many ways it will be dated, and in many ways it is dated. But I really like the look of this. I think they beautifully brought the texture and the feel of Narnia to life. The creatures, many of them looked very good. Yes, I know the cartoon creatures are very obviously cartooned, but I think it still worked very well for what they were doing.
Yes, you know, as I say, you can't fault the BBC's ambition in choosing to adapt the Chronicles of Narnia and in doing such a great job with the characters wearing animal costumes, with the clever photography that they used, the changes in scale, the giant tools and all that, the big props. It's all tremendous. I would point out, I know that some of the costumes caused the actors particular difficulties. You mentioned the beavers and the family of beavers who take the children in. I saw from one of the extra features that they had people on set who were called the beaver retrievers, whose job was basically to pick up the actors whenever they kept falling over because they couldn't see their feet and the costumes were rather difficult. But there you go. So I think all that stuff is tremendous. And I don't think that has aged too badly at all. I thought that, you know, as we say, the on-screen cartooning doesn't look good. But apart from that, it's aged quite well.
There was a moment with the cartoon characters that actually quite impressed me. With the rescue of Edmund, there's a sequence where a griffin flies in, picks up Edmund by the shoulders, and drops him on the back of a flying Pegasus.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was pretty impressive for something that was being done on a 1980s television production. Getting the pieces with the two flying creatures, getting it all to fit together, which I think it really did. Yes, it doesn't look like there are physical creatures there. They're obviously animated. But things like that, I thought really helped sell it, and I thought that did look good.
Okay. Of course, there's the performances to talk about. We've got a succession of child actors, and we've also got the adults who are required to either be covered in makeup and fur or to do rather sort of large and theatrical, almost pantomime performances as some of the bigger characters in this in the show. How do you think the performances stand up over time, Brian?
Well, it's interesting. For the most part, I do enjoy the performances here. The children, I think all of them are okay. Some of them are a little bit on the edge of that at times, but for the most part, they're okay. Some of them are really pretty good. The strangest performances, I think, come from Barbara Kellerman, with the White Witch being, I don't know what goes beyond over the top in terms of performances, but it's quite out there. And I think it only works because it's the White Witch. It is this sort of very strange out there character. So while it is, you know, sort of pushing it in some ways, I was okay with that because of the character that was being portrayed, that yes, this is a sort of stranger than strange and bigger than big kind of character. So all in all, I was pleased with the performances. I think characters like Tumnus and Reepicheep were pulled off quite well. I think Ronald Pickup does a lovely job with the voice of Aslan.
Okay. I mean, I'm conscious that I should be watching this and the performances through the eyes of a child, really. where I suspect, you know, all this stuff is just marvellous. The kids are great, the animals are great, and, you know, the White Witch, Barbara Kellerman, is a suitable, you know, scary villain. And, you know, there's a certain undeniable power in the rather theatrical sequence of when Aslan is sort of bound to the stone table, has his mane shorn off, and is killed by the White Witch and her creatures. So, yes, I would say if I had kids who were watching it at the time, they would have found that quite creepy and disturbing, which is how the story goes, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I think given the context of this, and you do have to see it as something that is from that era. The pacing is from that era. The visuals and some of the choices are from that era. And I think it was something that really, on the whole, was very well done. I enjoy this series a lot. I do think we have to talk about the more recent Disney versions a little bit. They obviously do some things better than these classic versions. You know, they use modern effects and huge movie budgets and are able to give us some visuals that are really special. And those are certainly productions that I enjoy, especially the first one. The thing about the Disney ones is I get the feel that they are producing a big movie, big budget movie that goes into a certain category, and that's how it has to be put together, and they squeeze the books into those to make them turn into the type of production that they want. Where the BBC versions, I think the whole production and the whole way things are being structured is to accommodate the story from the novels. So I think there's a significant difference there. And I think even with the Disney versions being well worth watching, these older BBC versions have a place and are still sort of worth watching and important for what they do with that source material.
Okay. I only saw the first of the Disney movies, and I did see that with my children in the cinema. And I'd have to say, you know, I wouldn't be in any rush to see the film again or any of the other films, but I probably would have another look at the BBC Chronicles of Narnia, particularly, as you say, for their attempt to fit in the whole book and to do it justice in 6 episodes over about 3 hours or so. So, yeah, I'd have to say, well done, the BBC. Whether, you know, modern kids will just prefer the much slicker CGI of the big budgets and having Prince Caspian look like a member of a boy band and so on, possibly they will. And, you know, this box set might be on a sticky wicket there, but who knows?
Okay, lots of interesting thoughts. Let's get to our recommendations here. Eamon, would you like to start?
Okay, well, I'm going to give this one a cautious recommendation. This is a box set for those of you who remember this from your childhood or remember watching it with your own kids. In that context, you're going to love it. You're going to put it back on. It's going to be warm and toasty and bringing you up to tea time on a, you know, in the run up to Christmas. Perfect. I'd put it up there with a box of delights for similar reasons. I would say, you know, I'd noticed on the Facebook group today that Gordon is perhaps more in team sort of aim and in saying, you know, he found it hasn't aged very well. But I noticed a comment from Mark who gives me exactly the answer that I was sort of asking about, which was, you know, have you watched this with your kids? And he has watched it with his kids recently and he said they loved it. So, yeah, cautious thumbs up from me here. It's a great box set and it's an absolute bargain. What about yourself, Brian?
I enjoyed watching this again tremendously. And yes, it is absolutely dated in certain ways. And you have to expect it to have the pacing and the visuals of something from the 80s. That's granted. But I really enjoyed this. And I think it's well worth watching. If you like the Narnia books, if you're willing to look at something from the 80s, absolutely, this gets a recommendation from me.
Great stuff. And do let us know about your Sunday tea time memories of BBC classics.
Yes, please do. And your thoughts about the Disney adaptations, if you've seen the animated or you remember the radio versions, and your thoughts about the books as well. We would be very happy to chat about that on the Facebook group for sure. So, in summary, the BBC adapted the C.S. Lewis novels, four of the novels from the Chronicles of Narnia, starting out with The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which sees four children transferred into the magical land of Narnia, where they must aid the forces of good against the evil White Witch in order to bring peace and harmony back to Narnia. And we move from that serial into Prince Caspian and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, so we get these ideas again of these children from our world being brought into Narnia to help the forces of good and help the talking animals and fight against some of these more oppressive forces. And later in The Silver Chair, we get ideas that are not dissimilar, where we are seeing children from our world aid the good forces with this royal family of Prince and then King Caspian and Prince Rillian, his son. And of course, all of this is under the guidance of the talking lion, Aslan.
Fantastic stuff. Do tell us what you think.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that conversation.
And of course, come back next time when we're attempting another comedy show, the spoof horrors of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place from Channel 4 in 2004. Some interesting stuff to talk about next time.
Absolutely. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com with all of our episodes available there. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group and join in on some of the conversation and tell us what you think about various versions of the Chronicles of Narnia. We're looking forward to chatting about that.
Please do. And please do join us at the Voice of Geeks. British Invaders is a proud member of the Voice of Geeks Network at VogueNetwork.com. You'll find our shows on Mondays and Tuesdays, but a host of other shows you may enjoy as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for joining us. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much. And until next time, it's Eamon in England reminding you to tap the back of those old wardrobes carefully. And here at British Invaders, it's always Christmas and never winter.